नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ज्ञान विज्ञान चित्तात्मा कूटस्थ विचितेन्द्रियः युक्त इत्युच्यते योगी समलोष्ट्वात्म कांचनः। A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi or mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebble, stone or gold, is the same. Purport: book knowledge without realization of the Supreme Truth is useless. This is stated as follows. अतः श्री कृष्ण नामादीन भवेद ग्राह्यम इंद्रियाय सेवोन्मुखे ही जीवादो स्वयमेव स्फुरत्यदः। No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. Only when one becomes spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord are the transcendental name, form, quality and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. This Bhagavad Gita is the science of Krishna consciousness. No one can become Krishna conscious simply by mundane scholarship. One must be fortunate enough to associate with a person who is in pure consciousness. A Krishna conscious person has realized knowledge by the grace of Krishna because he is satisfied with pure devotional service. By realized knowledge one becomes perfect. By transcendental knowledge one can remain steady in his convictions. But by mere academic knowledge one can be easily deluded and confused by apparent contradictions. It is the realized soul who is actually self-controlled because he is surrendered to Krishna. He is transcendental because he has nothing to do with mundane scholarship. For him, mundane scholarship and mental speculation, which may be as good as gold to others, are of no greater value than pebbles or stones. Now, this verse speaks of, Lord Krishna speaks of, the yukta yogi. Yukta here, Srila Prabhupada translates as competent for self-realization. A yogi is actually competent for self-realization when he is fully satisfied by jnana and vijnana, acquired knowledge and realized knowledge. These are the synonyms that Prabhupada gives. Realized knowledge, realization. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada states what it's a basic principle of Krishna consciousness understanding, that mundane scholarship is not helpful for understanding Krishna consciousness. But Krishna reveals himself to that devotee who, as is quoted from the famous verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the devotee here who is sevonmukh, who is inclined to serve Krishna. Knowledge is revealed to such a person. So, out of the many verses I could have chosen to speak on, or I could have spoken extemporaneously on any wide varieties of subjects, you may wonder why I've chosen to speak on the verse and purport which speaks about the incapacity of mundane scholarship to understand or to help us in understanding Krishna, and the necessity of a service. Where you may wonder, well, I've come to beat you all with a club and accuse you all of being mundane scholars. Is that the purpose? No, it's not. But it is always useful to remember these basics, because entering the world of scholarship means to enter a vast forest. Shabda jala maharanyam kevala chitta brahmanam, said Shankaracharya. We don't necessarily accept his analysis. That could be translated into modern hippie language as words. Words. What are the use of words? Shabda jala maharanyam kevala chitta brahmanam. If one gets lost in the world of words, then one can simply get bewildered. In the English saying, I mean, this is what we can, this can be, apart from being stated in Shastra, it's also what could be called common knowledge. We'll find throughout the world, in the various cultures that have evolved throughout this Kali Yuga, in various parts of the world, there are various truths which have become apparent to thoughtful persons in various cultures, which are not necessarily transcendental. Just like in English we say, a stitch in time saves nine. It's not a transcendental realization, but it's a useful piece of knowledge that helps us to live in this world. Can you understand what it means? A stitch in time saves nine. That if there's some defect, then it should be attended to quickly, otherwise it will become worse. Srila Prabhupada often used to quote Chanakya, that fire, disease, and debts should be dealt with immediately, otherwise they can get out of control. So it's a similar statement. So, Shabda Jala Maharanyam Kevala Chitta Brahmanam. In English, there's a saying, it's not exactly the same, but similar, that one cannot see the wood for the trees. The wood here means the forest. That you're so busy examining all the individual trees that you can't see the bigger picture. It means getting hung up on details, getting absorbed in details. So, it's possible when one enters the world of scholarship to become so much hung up on details that we forget the bigger picture or the purpose. So that's why it's good to come back to Bhagavad Gita as we go deeper and deeper into the various subtleties and nuances of various theories, various scholars have over the years dreamed up various theories. We'll find that the philosophical history of India is a vast, vast, it's just mind-boggling how the different Buddhist and Jain schools, for instance, have come up with so many technical theories, which always makes me wonder, because they're shunyavadi. They say that everything is nothing, or rather, they wouldn't say everything is nothing, because there is no everything. It's just nothing, nothing, nothing. But they have such complex theories to explain the nature of nothingness. And they're fighting with each other. They're different, trying to defeat each other. All these different schools of Buddhism and Jainism trying to prove that No, nothing is like this. No, it's like that. So they have, it seems strange. If everything is, wait a minute, there's no everything, so you can't say everything is nothing. Nothing is nothing, 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 nothing. I mean, there's nothing to say, is there? If there's just nothing, there's nothing to say, but they have a lot to say about nothing. So it's a big field of nothingness, or somethingness, or nothingness seen as somethingness in various ways. It's very technical terms. So this is the Sri Bhagavata Vidya Pith, which is concerned with somethingness, not with nothingness, with Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu, the subject described in Srimad Bhagavatam is the actual something. The actual something that is Janmadyasya Yataha, the source of all something. And even if there's nothing, that nothing is only in relationship to the something who is Krishna. So that is the subject. And Krishna is the subject of knowledge. He is knowledge. He is the giver of knowledge. He is not the subject of the knowledge in the manner of mundane scholarship. Mundane scholars, they may study Vaishnavism in the same way that someone studies butterflies or mathematics or enzymes. Some people study Krishna. They think he's the subject of their study. But Krishna is not exactly an object of study. He is, as we learn from Srila Prabhupada's purport, he is savior. He is the object of service, not of study. Exactly. Not study in the sense where one takes oneself as the jnani and Krishna as the object of knowledge. But rather, he is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and as a matter of service to Krishna, one may try to understand Krishna as he presents himself in Shastra. And with this conviction, as Srila Prabhupada writes here, by transcendental knowledge, one can remain steady in his convictions. So what is that conviction? Conviction is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are all his servants. That's the basic principle of Krishna consciousness, isn't it? And there are other points also, especially those who are in Krishna consciousness, in the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. They also have the, it's a basic principle of Krishna consciousness that one has to approach Krishna through his devotees, and especially those in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. They accept Srila Prabhupada as the medium through whom we shall approach Krishna. So this is our conviction. Based on this conviction, we study. We take to the study of Krishna consciousness. Now, when we take to this study, we may be surprised at how much there is to know. Maharanyam is a great forest, vast forest that we can't imagine. It seems unimaginable when we first come to Krishna consciousness. If we see all of Prabhupada's books, and we're told, well, we have to read all of these, and you see, nowadays it's 18 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. It used to be more. They put it into 18 volumes. Bhagavad Gita as it is, Letter of Devotion. It's 8 volumes, is it, of Chaitanya Charitamrita nowadays? 7 or 8? 9. 9 volumes. You say, well, that's a lot of books. But there's so many other books which we may be introduced to when we enter the world of scholarship, and we come to learn of so many different theories. Even this is Srimad Bhagavat Vidyapitam. But even among the commentators on Bhagavatam, different things are said, apparently different or contradictory. They may even be at odds with each other over various points. So, by transcendental knowledge, one can remain steady in his convictions. But by mere academic knowledge, one can be easily deluded and confused by apparent contradictions. This has great import, isn't it, what Prabhupada is saying? Because as we become acquainted with the vast knowledge presented in Shastra, it's easy to get confused by apparent contradictions. If we approach the study of Shastra with a mundane consciousness, seeing ourselves as the knower, instead of seeing ourselves as the servant of the knowledge of the given by the acharyas, then we will become, this is a mundane approach, like the mundane scholars. I was glancing at a book by a mundane scholar who was actually an initiated devotee of ISKCON, but then he thought he'd become a mundane scholar instead. So he wrote a book, and he was talking about how, he was discussing this very point, how Arsha Prayog. He said, it's just a mistake, but you don't want to admit it, so this is just hypocrisy. So, that's his rascal. That we accept, or if one is at all to enter into transcendental scholarship, then we have to accept the acharyas as transcendental personalities. Otherwise, it's all useless, because Brahma Pramad Vipralipsa Karana Pratam Arsha Vigya Vakya Nahi Doshesha. If we think that the acharyas are also mundane personalities, subject as we are to the four defects of the conditioned soul, then what's the use of, where is this, then you become a mundane scholar. They think they can just access Shastra and study. Shastra, like I say, is something they take to be a mundane subject. They doubt if Vyasa ever, any such person as Vyasadeva ever existed. And if he did, he was just some person like them, maybe not as advanced as them in scholarship, because he didn't have the benefit of generations starting with Monier Williams and H.H. Wilson, and they didn't have the benefit of all these generations of enlightened scholars like all these people. So, I mean, Vyasadeva was just a caveman.
Isn't that true?
He was a caveman. He didn't know how to write, so he got someone to write for him. Maybe Ganesh wrote in hieroglyphics or something. I don't know what their latest theories are. They're pretty good imaginations, these people. Anyway, their whole outlook is from the beginning scornful, not worshipful. And therefore, even though they study the same shastra as you study, they get a different result from the result that you're supposed to get. The result that you are supposed to get from studying this shastra is that you become more and more enlivened in Krishna consciousness, more and more convinced to surrender to Krishna. That's the test. Is your scholarship mundane or transcendental? It's not a matter of what you're studying, but it's a matter of the attitude. Atashi Krishna Namadi, Nabhaved Grahil Indriyai, Sivon Mukhi Hijivada, Swayameva Spirati Adaha. The mundane scholars and the devotional scholars, they may study the same thing, but the result is entirely different. The mundane scholars go to hell for studying the same things that you study, and you're supposed to go to Krishna by studying these things. You are with Krishna. If we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are with Krishna. If we are with Vidura and Maitreya and Uddhava, if we are with them, then we're with Krishna. If we're following in the same mood as them. But if we're in the mood of Duryodhana, he's also with Krishna. He also saw Krishna. But his position is not laudable. He was with Krishna, but only superficially. He was not with him by heart. He hated Krishna. Just like if we describe the beautiful form of Krishna to devotees, they will become enlivened by hearing about his beautiful threefold bending form, Achintya, Guna, Swarupam, Shama Sundaram. We become enlivened. But if we explain to persons who are envious of Krishna, they become angry, or they have no interest. So Duryodhana, he was only superficially with Krishna. So transcendental scholarship is that which is based on the worshipful attitude, that sarvame tadvitam manye yam mamvadasikesha, that what Krishna is giving us, what the pure devotees are giving us, they have no interest. So Duryodhana, he was only superficially with Krishna. So transcendental scholarship is that which is based on the worshipful attitude, that sarvame tadvitam manye yam mamvadasikesha, that what Krishna is giving us, what the pure devotees are giving us, is entirely true. And if I don't understand it, that's due to my inability, not due to Krishna's inability to present himself, just like the rascal Mahavadis. Dr. Radha Krishna, in his commentary on the Manmana Bhava Madhvato verse at the end of the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, commented that it is not the person Krishna to whom we have to surrender, but to the unborn eternal within Krishna. In other words, he thought that Krishna here has not been able to properly express himself, but never mind, I'm here now, and I'll tell you what he should have said. See, after 5,000 years, that now I have come, and don't worry folks, all the misunderstandings you had for the last 5,000 years, I've come to sort it all out and tell you the actual thing, that Krishna, pretty good philosopher, we have to give him credit, but he wasn't all that good, and I'm a much better scholar, and I'm the president of India, and I wrote so many books, and this is the real meaning of Bhagavad Gita. So such persons are fit candidates for the boot in the face, as Srila Prabhupada would say. Of course, we don't find that he actually put a boot in the face, but actually, if he had done, that would have been great mercy for them. We find that Vrindavan Das Thakur says the same thing about the offenders to Lord Nityananda, that I would like to kick them in the face. And then people say, what kind of Vaishnava is that? He wants to kick them. And what is it? Tabe lati marita shire upore. Then I'll kick them in the head. So you say, well, what kind of a Vaishnava is that? And Bhaktisiddhanta Sanskrit Thakur says, this is Vrindavan Das's great mercy, that if they could get its feet on their head, they'd be greatly benefited. And unless they get his feet on their head, they'll simply remain as rascal scholars. So, we have to see, what is the test? It's a scholarship. It can be very dangerous, as I'm sure you're being reminded many times. And it's a good thing you're reminded, just like those who are going out on book distribution in the Western countries, they regularly need classes about why we're going out, why we're doing this, because it's not an easy service and we need to be constantly reminded why we're doing it. Otherwise we say, why am I doing this for? I could sit comfortably in the temple and eat chapatis, and what do I need to go out and meet all these people for? Spitting in the... Nowadays there's not much spitting in the face. Times have changed. It used to be that our book distributors, they were literally punched in the face and arrested and spat on. Those times have changed, mostly in most countries of the world. So anyway, whatever service when we have a challenging service, it's required to be reminded why we're doing what we're doing and how we should be doing it in a manner that will be actually pleasing to Krishna, which is the whole point. So this purport is very valuable for those whose devotion to Krishna, budding devotion to Krishna, accompanied by their intellectual proclivities, have led them here. Because intellectual proclivities, if nicely centered on Krishna with a service mood, can lead to very great service. There's a lot of very important service that requires to be done in the intellectual field. The intellectual field at the present time is completely dominated by people who do not accept that the Vastava Vastu is Krishna. They do not accept Krishna as supreme reality. They think that the Hare Krishna movement some of them think that it's an interesting thing to study. There are quite a few books coming out now by mundane scholars about the Krishna consciousness movement. And they always want to put it in a box so that they can understand it according to their mundane way of thinking. They try to put it in the psychology box, the sociology box, the anthropology box, and then they feel, phew, okay, it's all right, we got it under control. But Krishna doesn't belong in any box. We're in his box. We're under his control. So, there is important service to be done in this field, but it requires the basic conviction that, first of all, I can't understand anything by myself. Intelligence is there, no doubt. That is God-given intelligence. But that intelligence has to be subordinated to the principle of service. This basic point should always be understood. As we find, Srila Prabhupada was always speaking in a very simple way, getting the basic points over. So the basic point that Prabhupada repeated time and time again, we are not the controllers, we are controlled. We should always remember this, that however much we may think I'm a great scholar, this, that, we have to die. And at the time of death, we have to remember Krishna in a loving manner. So everything will be tested. And even before the time of death, we have to try to use this human form of life that we have received. You are all in your, or most of you are in your youth. So, student life is a preparation. So, there's preparation for a life of service. It's not that only I'm going to think how to think of Krishna at the time of death. But one has to think how to serve the mission of Krishna before the time of death. Actually, if we simply think how to dedicate our lives in the service of Krishna, then we don't have to worry about thinking of Krishna at the time of death, because he will think of us. Preparation. So, there's preparation for a life of service. It's not that only I'm going to think how to think of Krishna at the time of death. But one has to think how to serve the mission of Krishna before the time of death. Actually, if we simply think how to dedicate our lives in the service of Krishna, then we don't have to worry about thinking of Krishna at the time of death, because he will think of us. We can have that faith that if we sincerely try in this life to serve Krishna, Krishna is not an ingrate. He won't forget us. It's not that if we serve Krishna all our lives, we try to, and then Krishna thinks, oh, that guy, he always had too much chapatis, I'm going to forget him. You know, he can take birth as a pig or something. No, Krishna is not like that. Krishna is very grateful. Krishna Bharadaya Moha, he's very merciful. So we can have the faith that if we sincerely try to serve Krishna, then Krishna will certainly reciprocate. So the basic understanding and realization that we are subordinate, we are very tiny little beings. And however big our brain may be compared to some others, still our brain is a midget brain. Especially if we see the great acharyas of the past. But even if we have four brains as good as Lord Brahma, each one, then Lord Brahma himself also says, what's the verse? There's so many. Jananta eva jananta kimba bhuktam namepa. What is it? No. Manasa Vapusavacha. Yeah, that's another one. Gyane Prayasam. Atapite Deva. So many. Lord Brahma spoke. Vaibhavam Tavagocha. That person is saying that. Others, Lord Brahma says that others may say that I know Krishna, but as far as I'm concerned with my body, minds, and words, I don't know anything about it. Then Atapite Deva Padam, which I Prasada Leshana Grihita Yavi Janati Tatvam Bhagavan Shahimura Chanya Ekopi Charitamrita. By brain power, one cannot understand Krishna. If one gets a little of his mercy, then one can understand Krishna in truth. Otherwise, without Krishna's mercy, it's not possible to understand. Then Jnane Prayasa Mudapasya Namante Eva. There's so many verses spoken by Lord Brahma and the demigods. It should be fairly easy to get puffed up if you're a big demigod with a big brain, big capacity, big position in the universe, a lot of respect. But before Gopal, who's wandering in the woods, blowing on his flute, they're all midgets. So we're all micro midgets in comparison to Lord Brahma. When we're walking on the street, we might tread on an ant, we don't think anything of it. Well, the ant, in comparison to us, our position is something like that compared to Lord Brahma. We're really minuscule compared to him. But he sees his position like that in front of Krishna. So it's good to remember our limitations. We are meant for service. Even if apparently we know a lot, we don't really know very much at all. And we're only meant for service. So this is the test. If we find that by our scholarship we're becoming more confused than we're on the mundane platform, means we're going backwards. But if by our scholarship or attempts at scholarship we become more and more convinced of what Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas have given us, then we're nicely situated. Tashi Krishna Ramadi, Nabhavendra Himindriya, Siva Loki Hijiva, Nisranga Nisprapyada. And as mentioned in this verse, Samalosh Drashna Kanta. Our material, desires for material wealth and acquisition, that's a very basic result of acquiring knowledge, is that one is not interested in these things. Even the acquisition of knowledge, that I will learn more and more and more, that can also be a kind of anartha. If it's not clearly meant for the service of Krishna. Any questions, comments, protests, please, voice them now. Yes. Oh, wait a minute, we have a... Yeah.
You said those verses that Brahma says that he doesn't understand Krishna. He also says in the third chapter that one verse, he says that Nadosi made this if you ask, pray that I can't understand you. But
later he became bewildered. Krishna gave him the benediction that he would never be bewildered. And later he became bewildered. So, what's the purport of that? Contradiction?
I thought Brahma was trying to tell him that sometimes he feels that he knows, but yet he doesn't know about or what is it? Or is he trying to say that he can't know that he has?
Is he trying to say, you mean he's trying to say, but he can't express himself properly and you have to say it for him better? Huh?
Is he trying to say that Sometimes in the feeling.
If you say, is he trying to say, you're suggesting that he's not really able to articulate properly, and now you're going to articulate it for him better. You're putting yourself in a superior position to him.
Should we understand from that?
That's a better way to put it.
Should we understand from that that he is telling us that sometimes we may feel that we understand, but actually we're not understood?
Yes, we should have. Lord Krishna states, Aham Saradasya Prabhava Matasarvam Pravatate Iti Matva Vajante Ma Buddha Vasamita. One who understands Krishna as the source of everything engages in Krishna's service with love. So it's not that we don't know anything about Krishna. We can know that he is janmadhyasya yataha. He is the source of everything. But the extent of his glories is not within our capacity to understand. That he is Bhagavan, Antaryami, Brahma, that he is omniscient, omnipotent, what's the other one? Omnipresent. What's the sensory words for that? Omniscient is sarvagya. Omnipresent, sarvavyapi, and sarvashaktiman, I suppose is the other one. All powerful, omnipotent, yeah. So, that we can accept on principle. But the extent of his glories is not within the scope of a jiva to understand. So the principles of his greatness we should understand. And we can understand. But the extent of his greatness is not possible to understand. And understanding that it's not possible to understand is also part of understanding Krishna.
There was also in this, he said, Maharani, that how can we have Dukkha Hari, because I'm ecstatic and familiar in Hari, that's why whatever I speak can never go wrong.
Yeah. Even if it apparently appears to be wrong. Yes, please.
How does one can become a man's power if you say it exactly?
Sorry?
How does what went wrong with the proper disciple that became a man's power?
What went wrong with the Prabhupada disciple that became a mundane scholar?
Yes.
Well, I guess he didn't read the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Didn't keep on reading it. There are various, why do people deviate? Well, there are various, there may be various reasons for that. Sangha dosh. Sangat sanjayate kama. If one associates with people who are not in Krishna consciousness, then their attitude tends to rub off. One may become inordinately enamored by the quality, by the mundane qualities of certain persons. Just like we might see some books by some mundane scholars or speak with them and be impressed by their scholarship. They're good scholars. Or we might read a book by a non-devotee and be impressed by the quality of language. This is the language is so good. I know that I know some Bengali devotees, I've heard them quote to me Rabindranath Tagore's poems, and if you hear it, it sounds brilliant. It's something very wonderful, but it's mundane. So if we become enamored by that, by the mundane quality, then we become captured by Dushta Saraswati, the goddess who oversees the mundane aspect of knowledge, or the perverted aspect of knowledge, by which everyone's Shuddha Saraswati points out how we can see, what is that, Krishna Mayam Jagat. Everything in the world is full of Krishna. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. And Dushta Saraswati, then we see Idam Hi Vishvam Bhagavan Nivetara. We see this world is seen, everything is not in relationship to Krishna. So there's one possibility, being enamored by the intellectual abilities of non-devotees, and being attracted to that, and thinking, well, these people, these devotees, they're just, you know, they don't know very much, they're just, you know, just chanting Hare Krishna. These scholars, they really know a lot. There's the danger of being attracted on the mundane platform. But the mundane scholars, by profession, they must be offensive to Krishna. Because they study Krishna, or they study Vaishnavism and the Shastra and the Acharyas without an attitude of reverence, based on anthropological theories that we all descended from cavemen, and then they just presume that everyone has ulterior motives, like themselves. Just like you'll find mundane scholars, they take it that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they just presume he had epileptic fits, or he had fits of madness. And it's actually stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the madness. But when a devotee reads that, then his understanding of the madness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very different from that of a mundane person who does not admit that there is actually such a thing as a transcendental experience. They presume that all experience is mundane. So when they read of the madness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they take it to be due to some defect in his brain structure, due to some genetic defect or something like this. So it becomes offensive, extremely offensive. They are required to be mundane. They cannot. The mundane academician, by definition, cannot but be irreverent. Or offensive. So it's very dangerous. Now in some ways the mundane scholars, you could say they can in some ways help the cause of Vaishnavism, in as much as some of them they're good scholars and they do some good research, but it requires a devotee with firm conviction in the sanctity of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra to take advantage of that without being victimized.
As we explained, when we are reading through different subject matters, like grammar or other philosophy.
Like what, sorry?
Like grammar or philosophy or... So, there are... Inevitably, we have to come across really details the superficial... So, those points...
Well, they may not be superficial. If they're given by our acharyas, we can't say they're superficial. They're details, but not necessarily superficial.
Yeah.
And our acharyas are not concerned with superficiality. Or they may point out the superficialities of others. But everything they give us is worshipable. Just like I just got some news by an email that one ISKCON sannyasi is giving up his designation. He wants to remain true to his vows, but he no longer wants to have the designation of a sannyasi. So in some ways you could say, well, what difference does it make? Because sannyas, it's nothing to do with the soul. But it is something received from our acharyas. It's not such a light thing. It's given by shastra, given by tradition, and given by the acharya. It's just like marriage. You could say, well, we don't have any husband and wife anymore. We'll still like each other. You've heard that one before? We'll still be friends. But we don't. But marriage is a sacred sacrament. Similarly, taking sannyas, it's a sacred vow. It's not a thing to be given up now. You may say, well, I'm not going to get married, but I don't want to be a sannyas. It's not something to be given up. It's not superficial. In one sense, you could say it's extraneous. It's not an activity of the soul to take sannyas. But on the other hand, it is something received from, like I said, from shastra and from the acharyas. So it's not such a light thing.
So during that time, we might come across the details. So,
no, there's so much. The whole history of philosophy is one of fighting.
So how do we avoid this tendency of intellectual gratification that might come up due to our tradition?
Intellectual sense gratification? That's what I'm saying. Everything we have to do in a mode of service. The only reason to study here, we could say intellectual sense gratification according to our conditioning. It doesn't have to be like that. It rather, if we're in a mood of service, then it's rather dovetailing our propensity. Just like Krishna, he told Arjuna to fight. He didn't say, okay Arjuna, you forget it. You go and do the cooking, we'll call Draupadi. She can do the fighting. He didn't do that. Arjuna was meant to fight, not Draupadi. Now Arjuna might have been a cook, good cook, and Draupadi might have been a good fighter, you never know. But he had a specific service to do, so everything is meant for service. We have to see everything we do. Is it for service or not for service? How much we eat, how much we sleep, all these things. It can be done for sense gratification or it can be done not. We have to do it for service. So that's why we have to have a mission. It's good from the beginning to have a vision that I'm doing this. I'm studying here not just because I like to study, but because I have a mission here. It's like Arjuna, he was acquiring weapons. All the different demigods were giving him weapons. So there was a purpose, and eventually he had to fight. That's why it's just such a farce when he told Nayotsya. He told, I'm not Govinda, I'm not going to fight. It's just such a farce, you know. The whole Mahabharata is a story of how he's getting his martial training. He's getting it, and then at the end, when the moment comes, he says, well, you know what? Forget it. It's just a farce. That's why Krishna told him, well, you're just a nonsense. What nonsense are you talking? So that might be the same with you. After studying all these things, if you're asked to write some papers or do some research, and you say, I'm going to go and join the 24-hour kirtan party. then what's the point of your study? You have to do something with it also. You have to use it. Of course, this basic study can be useful in many fields, even if you don't directly, if you don't spend your whole life as a scholar. If you're preaching, or engaged in various preaching services, or even if you're teaching little kids, then it'll be useful. It's just like normally people get education when they're children. It's another thing you can remember, that when you, so as not to get puffed up, that the studies that you're doing, actually it's meant for children. Normally it's children of 7 or 8 years old study this grammar and all this kind of thing. Anything else? All right. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam.